And joining me in the KRBS studios this afternoon is Helena Putnam. She is with the board of Festivals Acadien et Creole. And it is upon us, Helena.
It is here. Yes. Thank you, Judith. It's a pleasure to be here on behalf of the festival. Yes, it's upon us.
Even though it's been moved into October, it just comes up so quickly, and I know everyone's excited about it. It's like some grand celebration in another country that everyone looks forward to all year long, and people feel that way and have for decades now.
That's correct. It's a very important celebration for the people of Louisiana, and people do look forward to it. And for some of us, it doesn't come around often enough, actually. So we're very excited.
Yeah. And you all have been adding activities to the festival. I don't remember whether it was 2 or 3 years ago that a Friday night was added to the festival. So really people get to enjoy the music and cultural activities all weekend now.
That's correct. We had lots of requests for the festival to start a little earlier so they could have a little bit more time to celebrate. And so now we do include, we open the festival actually on Friday night with a great fête dodo in Girard Park.
Well, let's talk about the scope of the festival, because it is called Festivals with an S on the end of it. Tell us what goes on the festival grounds. How many stages and what aspects of the festival are there beyond just the music?
There are actually several festivals happening concurrently during this weekend. Besides music, music is the part of the festival that most people hear about. But we also have other things going on in the festival, on the festival grounds. For example, we also have a food festival where we have lots of vendors setting up and selling food native to Louisiana, such as things made with crawfish and shrimp and boudin and all those luscious things we love to eat here. These kinds of dishes are available. So this is a separate festival, a Bayou Food Festival. We also have a Louisiana Crafts Fair, where we have a collection of native craft people who come and sell their wares to the festival visitors. In addition, we also have something called Culture Sur la Table, which is a part of the festival where our preparing our food in this area is showcased. And, of course, we have other venues where people can participate in jam sessions or watch jam sessions. People can also watch interviews. We have interesting interviews going on in some of our venues. And we also have things for the children. We have face painting as well as storytelling and arts and crafts with local artists. So there is a lot going on in the park all at the same time.
It sounds like it. And I know that when you're talking about the food festival, there are people who come from all over the country and even the world to come to this festival. And they do often talk about the food, knowing that they're going to be getting very local, traditional foods in addition to all of the great music.
Absolutely. The food is fantastic. There will be things available for purchase, such as shrimp etouffee, crawfish dishes, shrimp and tasso. We also have things like seafood etouffee, the crab cakes.
So everyone's being very creative about some of these dishes.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's something for every taste.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us about the grounds and how everything is set up there. How many stages do you have now?
This particular year, we have 3 stages. We normally have 2. We have San Maluisian, which is considered the main music stage, and the Heritage Stage, which are the two basic music venues in the park. This year, we also have the Bicentennial stage, music stage. And this is a very interesting aspect of this year's festival. We are also celebrating the bicentennial of Louisiana statehood. So we're going to be featuring some special events at our bicentennial stage this year.
What kinds of events are you going to have there? People giving talks, lectures about?
Well, actually, we're going to be showcasing the diversity of the music in Louisiana. You know, Cajun music went through an evolutionary process, and a lot of the music that we now enjoy was influenced by other musical genres. And that's what we're going to be showcasing in our bicentennial stage. A very interesting mix. We're going to be having bluegrass, which of course was one of the influences on our local music. We're also going to be having country music there, as well as traditional Cajun and Creole music. In addition, we will be having a Catholic Mass on Sunday morning at 9:30. For those that would like to be in the park and attend their Sunday Mass as well. We will also be having Zydeco music as well as traditional Creole music, as I mentioned, and some swamp pop.
So really showcasing the diversity there.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a great stage. Well, let's go to the main stages and just talk about the performers who will be there. What's going to happen Friday night?
Well, Friday night, we have a great show set up. The show will open at 5:30 with our very own Joël Sonnier. He will be opening the festival for us at 5:30. And then after Joël, we will be having Little Band of Gold with special guests. And this is going to be showcasing, of course, that genre of music that has a great influence and was influenced also by Cajun music.
Right. So that's going to be on the main stage Friday night. So it's just that one stage, but people can start off. And again, as we mentioned, so many people coming from out of town, they really like it to start earlier. And that's been a great addition
to the festival. That's correct. That'll be the only musical venue that will be open Friday night. Of course, all of our food vendors and all of the other venues will be available as well.
On Friday night.
Friday night.
All right. So you don't have to wait till the next day for those great dishes. So the next day, Saturday, we start off at like 10 in the morning?
It kicks off at 10:45 on the main stage. I'm sorry, 10:30 on the main stage with the Hufall, Dupuy, and Fusilier Cajun Band, followed by the Babineaux Sisters Band, which is a very interesting, it's a young group of musicians, which we're very excited about that, to have our young people performing. And at 1 o'clock, we have Preston Frank, Ed Poulard, and Friends, followed by, at 2:15, the Savoy Family Band, and then following the Savoys, we have Cedric Watson and Bijou Creole. And, of course, after Cedric gets off the stage, we'll welcome one of our mainstays in Cajun music, and that's Walter Mouton and the Scott Playboys at 4:45. And the evening will finish with another group of young people that we are so very proud of in our culture, and that's Fufole from 6 to 7. And that's just the main stage.
Right. Mm-hmm. You can see why, just that lineup right there, you can see why we have that image of, you know, the people bringing their chairs and just sitting all day because there's so much great music and, of course, the food there. But that wonderful, iconic image of people bringing their folding chairs and setting up camp and just sitting there the entire day and
evening.
There
is plenty to enjoy and plenty to take in on that first day of the festival, including the first day of the festival at our Heritage Stage. We will have Gino Delafosse and Fritz Rocking Boogie, which will begin at 10:45 in the morning, followed by Les Bassettes. And then after Les Bassettes will be Joël Savoy and Lindsay Young, which is a very interesting mix of talent that we are thrilled to have. At 1:45 on the Heritage Stage, we will have the Red Stick Ramblers. At 3, Terry and the Zydeco Bad Boys. And at 4:15, one of our local legends, Mr. Jesse Leger, along with Joël Savoy. And at 5:30, the Lost Bayou Ramblers will shake things up a bit. And then from 6:45 to 7:45, closing out the day on that stage, will be Bonsoir Catin. So you can tell by the lineup that we have quite a mix of different kinds of music.
Traditional groups, young groups, all kinds of traditions.
That appeals to a large crowd. That's
absolutely
correct.
Now, I believe you all have a really nice website. People can go there to find the schedule.
Yes, it's festivalsacadienetcreole.com. And all of the schedules and venues are listed there for, you know, people who need to get that information.
Absolutely. And right in front of me, I see some great posters and also the festival guide that you have that people can get. Tell me about the poster and who's the festival artist.
Oh, our poster is superb this year. We've had some great, great artists. The poster this year was by the graphic artist Megan Barra, and it is absolutely beautiful poster. It was a very intricate process. It was originally a sewn poster, patchwork together on with silk, and then overlaid with the influence of the music and the artists that are performing this year. It's a beautiful poster. It looks like a patchwork quilt, mm-hmm. but the top part looks like a tree, if anybody can visualize that.
Yes.
And the roots of the image show the influence of Louisiana music that had an influence on Cajun and Creole music, and the music that Cajun and Creole music also influenced, such artists as Fats Domino, Little Richard,
Louis Armstrong.
Louis Armstrong. Yes. Mm-hmm. So many of Hank Williams.
So all the musical racines and influences.
That's right. These were the roots of
music.
Louisiana music.
Right, and it's developed into so many great young groups here.
And that's right. Mm-hmm. We have some of the groups that I mentioned. And the poster also depicts the influence of our honoree this year, Mr. James Domingo, who was legendary in his vision of presenting Louisiana culture and language, especially the music, and helping to preserve it by establishing Codafil to preserve the language. We're very happy to honor his memory this mm-hmm. year as our honoree.
Absolutely. I'm sure some people will want to know where they can get the posters. Are you selling them on the festival grounds?
The posters mm-hmm. are available on the festival grounds, mm-hmm. absolutely, okay. as well as our festival pins. And we also would like to invite anyone who is interested in participating in the festival as a volunteer. We're always in need of volunteers, and they can go right to our website, and there is a volunteer link where they can sign up to participate in the festivities, and it makes it that much more of an enriching mm-hmm. Experience when you can volunteer and participate.
Do you all need volunteers for this festival, or are you looking forward to...
Oh, no, we're still needing okay. volunteers for this festival, so okay. it's not too late to sign up. We're always in need of people to help out, and so we'd appreciate it.
So at the website, there is a volunteer button that people can
There's
check
a
out.
Volunteer link on
okay.
the website,
well,
correct.
Good. So if you still would like to volunteer for the festival, there are plenty of opportunities this
Absolutely.
Weekend.
Absolutely.
If you have just tuned in, my guest is Helena Putnam. She is on the board of Festivals Acadien et Creole, which takes place this weekend here in Lafayette in Girard Park. It begins on Friday. Now there are 3 days, one evening, 2 days of music, and all day Friday there are things going on that you can participate in, but on the main festival ground in the evening, the music starts on the main stage. Helena, do you remember your very first festival?
I absolutely do. Mm-hmm. I started working on this festival approximately 21 years ago. And it was because of my interest in Cajun music. I was also a French teacher, so it was something that I could bring back to my students. And I remember my first experience working backstage with musicians, again, preparing them to for their performances. And I have been hooked ever since. It's been an enriching experience for me all these years.
And you must have had occasion to encounter many people from other places who have come here for this festival. What do you think they bring away with them?
Absolutely. I think that they are just, in a way, many of them are mesmerized mm-hmm. by the joie de vivre that we exhibit here and by the uniqueness of our culture and our music. It's something new for them and something that they experience. Cajun music and Cajun culture is so inclusive. We enjoy having visitors, and we try to include everyone in all of our activities. And I think they really feel welcome here, mm-hmm. and that's a plus.
Especially at this festival. You're right.
Especially at this festival.
Very, very welcoming festival. Again, festivals Acadien et Creole will take place this weekend in Girard Park. And I have to say, KRVS is carrying it live. We'll carry it live all day Saturday and all day Sunday. So if you have friends and family who weren't able to make it in for the festival, who live in other countries or states, they can tune in on KRVS.
And that's correct.
We've had emails from people saying that they came here because they had first heard it on the internet.
Wonderful. That's wonderful.
So we will be doing that this weekend, again, starting on Saturday and Sunday. But that Friday night is getting very popular out in the park.
Friday night, 5:30, yeah. correct.
Right.
Now, we have several parking venue areas on the UL campus. And I would like to mention that our Handicap parking will be available behind the UL Art Museum on St. Mary. I know that sometimes that's a problem for handicapped people to access parking, but there is parking behind the Art Museum.
Okay, and what are some other good parking places? You have shuttles going back
and forth? We have a shuttle, yes, from Cajun Field, which will be running both days. And, of course, many of the UL faculty and student parking areas are supposed to be open for the weekend so that people should be able to find parking places.
All right. Great collaboration between the university and the festival.
Absolutely.
My guest again, Helena Putnam, on the board of festivals Acadien et Creole, opens this Friday in Girard Park. You can find lots of information on their website. You can pick up a brochure now. Are they around town?
They are available in several venues in town, absolutely.
Okay. Well, you can pick up a brochure now or make your own festival schedule by looking at the website. And of course, these beautiful posters will be available on the festival grounds.
Absolutely.
As well. Well, Helena, thank you for your hard work and dedication with the festival, being on the board, and really working to make it possible for all of us to appreciate it year after year.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you.
Pianist Laura Constantine performing a number called Willie Fugel's Blues. And then before that, David Greeley from his album of original music. Well, not original music. This was an adaptation. This was McGee's A Minor Waltz. It's 24 minutes past the hour of 3 o'clock. Time to head back into the studio with Judith.
And with me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is Professor Mary Ann Wilson. She is a professor of English here at UL Lafayette, here to talk about Flannery O'Connor and an amazing symposium that she has organized in collaboration with some others on campus. Flannery O'Connor, The Legacy of a Southern Catholic Writer, is the title of this symposium. It's a pretty fabulous reason why you all are having this symposium. But before we talk about that, for those people in our audience who may only remember Flannery O'Connor in some anthology that they read back in high school, tell us just a bit about her.
Well, she was a Georgia writer, born in Savannah, later moved to Milledgeville, as she said, right down the street from the insane asylum. And she was a Southern Catholic writer, very devout in her faith. But she has made a major contribution in novels and short stories to American literature, to Southern literature, to Georgia literature, to world literature. Like Faulkner, she's been translated into so many languages.
That's right. So that's what's so interesting about the symposium, kind of discussing her Catholicism, because it really doesn't completely inform her work, which is so much more universal.
No, absolutely. And I think she realized that growing up as a Catholic in South Georgia, in the middle of the Bible Belt, mm-hmm. she felt that otherness, and she complained that Catholics didn't know the Bible well enough, but those South Georgia Protestants
sure did.
And that's the language that's in her stories, right. Is South Georgia Protestantism.
That's right, exactly.
But the vision that informs the fiction is a Catholic vision.
Well, we're going to talk about that in just a moment. Again, for some of our listeners who may not be completely familiar with her works, could you name some of her more well-known pieces, short stories, novels?
Sure. Two of the most frequently anthologized short stories are Good Country People and A Good Man Is Hard to Find. Mm-hmm. And her novel, The Violent Bear It Away, is famous. Wise Blood is famous. Film has been made from Wise Blood, directed by John Huston, an amazing film. And I hear through the grapevine that a film is being made from The Violent Bear It Away. So that's exciting, too, that her works continue to be rediscovered and reinvented and reimagined in the 21st century.
They always feel contemporary.
Yes.
Somehow, the relationships.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And she would say that's because she's so rooted in the earthy as opposed to that spiritual vision. Mm. Like the great mystics, she felt that the way to the spirit was through the body. And you've got lots of bodies, lots of body parts in her works.
Lots of really interesting bodies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Holga, the woman who's seduced by the Bible salesman who takes her wooden leg.
Just this marvelous comic cast.
In Good Country People. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, one of our speakers at the symposium will be talking about the humor of Flannery O'Connor, which is quite innovative and unusual in a religious writer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, tell us how you got interested in Flannery O'Connor, what your particular study of literature was, and how you really developed an interest.
Well, I was born in Birmingham, Alabama, part of the Deep South, in that Bible Belt country, and went to school in Alabama, and then moved to Atlanta, Georgia. And of course, living in Georgia, Flannery O'Connor is everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I started teaching her at Georgia State University and became interested in women's studies as a discipline. And I began to see her not just as a part of Southern lit, but as a part of women's lit, as a part of American lit. And I continued to teach her. I've been to Milledgeville to visit her house, Andalusia, with my son, who's also a Southern Lit scholar. So that was a nice family odyssey.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, and then you come here to the University of Louisiana at Lafayette.
Yes, in the 80s.
Yes, and you discovered a tape came into your possession.
Yes.
How did that happen?
This is so bizarre. I vaguely remember one of my colleagues giving me this tape in an old beat-up pink box.
We're not talking about a cassette tape.
No, we're talking about an old reel-to-reel brown brittle tape. And I glanced at it and I saw it was Flannery O'Connor lecture, and I promptly got busy with something else and put it in a drawer and forgot about it for several years. And I was cleaning out my file cabinets last spring and there it was. And I had just been teaching, serendipity, a story by O'Connor, and I thought, 1962. She was here in 1962, and I started doing research and found out she had indeed done a tour of Texas and Louisiana 2 years before she died, visiting universities, visiting Catholic student centers, and reading from her work. And I found out she had come to Wisdom Center. So I called Father Bryce Sibley and contacted Center for Louisiana Studies. I didn't know what shape that tape was in, but it has since been digitized and is in quite good shape, I think. And you can hear that remarkable Southern South Georgia drawl that O'Connor had.
What a great journey for that tape. And
it was.
Just to, and of course, you know, we think of her as a great literary celebrity. Mm-hmm. And so to think that she came to give, in some ways, a casual lecture here seems fascinating. But again, that was a time period where there weren't videos. There weren't the same kinds of ways of passing information or sharing film. So it was very important that people get out there and read and give lectures.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And she had quite a presence, despite that soft Southern voice, just as Faulkner did. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I heard Faulkner. Faulkner's voice, I thought, that can't be. That little voice didn't write all those beautiful works, all those powerful works. But yes, it was your presence that made the difference back then, and your voice. Mm-hmm. And those were the things that people came to hear and see.
Right. So she was giving lectures at Catholic student centers across Louisiana and Texas. Mm-hmm. What was her topic? What was she addressing?
She generally titled her talks The Catholic Writer in the Protestant South, which gave her lots of wiggle room to talk about whatever. And she talked about language and obviously about religion and about feeling othered in an alien environment and how that was not so much a weakness as a strength sometimes because it made you speak louder. And it made you draw more startling figures in your fiction. Mm-hmm. You know, she was called a Southern grotesque writer because so many of her stories have grotesque characters and figures, which are larger than life and bizarre. Mm-hmm. And she said that when you live in an area where you are other and where you must speak more loudly to be heard, these are the kinds of figures you have to draw.
You need to be more startling.
Yes.
Well, it must have been interesting for her to give a lecture in Southern Louisiana, where at that time it was primarily Catholic. So
yes.
The response.
Yes, I know. And she acknowledges that, but she also acknowledged that just a little bit down the road, she felt the presence of the devil very strongly in New Orleans. So despite the Catholicism,
did
or
she
maybe
give a,
because of it.
Maybe so. Did she give a lecture in New Orleans on that same circuit?
Yes, she went to Loyola after she came to UL in 1962. Yeah, November, in fact, which is obviously the month that the symposium is going to be.
50 years ago, this coming month.
Yes.
If you have just tuned in, my guest is Professor Marianne Wilson. She is a professor in the English department here at UL Lafayette. She teaches a variety of subjects, including women's studies, Southern literature, and came into the possession of a tape of Flannery O'Connor speaking here on the UL campus, USL back then, at the Catholic Student Center, at the Wisdom Center on campus.
Right.
She had this tape, a reel-to-reel tape, and it was good enough to be digitized, and so you can hear her voice on there.
Yes.
And thanks again to the Center for Louisiana Studies that helped out, you know, putting that tape together. So having listened to the tape, what impresses you about it? I guess as a woman, a Southern writer.
The fact that O'Connor was so self-deprecating, despite her immense talent, that she never took herself very seriously. But her readers took her very seriously.
Quite renowned at that time.
Yes, absolutely. As I said, this was only 2 years before she died, and she was at the height of her career and her fame. And yet she found ways to make fun of herself, to make fun of writing fiction, to make fun of being a Southerner, to make fun of what people thought a Southern writer was. In fact, if I could just read this one brief statement.
You have a transcript from
the tape. Have a typed transcript of the talk, and she talks about the prejudices and misconceptions people have about Southern writers. She says, the circumstance of being a Southerner, of living in a non-Catholic but religious society, furnishes the Catholic novelist with some very fine antidotes to his own worst tendencies. I once read a review of two books by Catholics on the subject of the Catholic novel. One writer said that in order for a novelist to be a Catholic one, it would have to be about a saint. And the other writer said that it would have to be by a saint. So what was Catholic fiction? Who could write it?
Well, how does that inform her work? I mean, again, she's speaking in the voice in many ways of the Southern Protestant when she writes.
Absolutely. But, and there's no preaching and proselytizing in her works. In fact, I almost flinch when I read that label Catholic novelist.
Right.
And I don't think she would have considered herself to be such.
Right. So what was it about her life and the way she thought philosophically that, you know, knowing that you could perhaps even see in her work?
Well, she definitely believed in the power of evil in the world, however that manifests itself. She believed in the power of grace and redemption, which are universal concepts in all religions. And she believed in sudden, startling revelations, which form the epiphanies in her stories, and that people can become enlightened, often too late in their lives to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are generic religious concepts. I don't see those as necessarily Catholic in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And her epiphanies take place in pig pens and doctor's
barn
offices
lofts.
And barn lofts and, very earthy places.
The back of a car lost somewhere.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a fascinating writer. And out of this tape and the 50-year anniversary of her being here at UL, you have created a symposium, again, along with the Catholic Student Center here on campus.
Yes.
It will be held in November 9th and 10th.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to take place during this symposium?
Well, we'll have a kickoff reception at our beautiful Alumni Center on Friday night, November 9th. And then on Saturday, we have three outstanding O'Connor scholars who've come from various parts of the country to talk about her work. Christina Bieber Lake from Wheaton College, who's written a book on Flannery O'Connor's incarnational imagination. And Bill Sessions, my former colleague at Georgia State University in Atlanta, who has just finished the authorized biography of Flannery O'Connor, the only authorized biography of O'Connor. And he will be talking about that and a recently discovered journal of prayers by Flannery O'Connor, which is very interesting, another recent literary find. And then Farrell O'Gorman from Belmont Abbey College in North Carolina will be talking about one of her most famous books, A Good Man is Hard to Find, collection of short stories.
Mm-hmm.
And interspersed with that will be workshops and a showing of her film, The Displaced Person, based on one of her short stories, and then a dinner that night out mm-hmm. in Lafayette.
So anyone who is interested in Flannery O'Connor remembers loving a story they
yes.
read in an anthology
yes.
in school, they're welcome to register
Absolutely.
For the symposium.
Absolutely. There's a wonderful website which you can reach through OurLadyOfWisdom.org. Mm-hmm. There's a link there. And we have housing set up for those people who are out of town at the Hilton Garden Inn. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it promises to be a wonderful series of events. You can go to as few or as many of the events as you like. Once you get online, you'll see that you can pick and choose. Mm-hmm. And we hope to have a broad cross-section of people there, students and faculty and community people and just people who love Flannery O'Connor.
That's right. What a yeah. stimulating group of people it will be.
Right.
And also to celebrate a very interesting little morsel of history here at the university.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think it's something we can be proud of and something that needs to be remembered.
Yes. Mm-hmm. My guest, Professor Marianne Wilson, talking about a symposium on Flannery O'Connor that will be November 9th and 10th, called Flannery O'Connor, The Legacy of a Southern Catholic Writer. She spoke 50 years ago on the UL campus, USL campus at Wisdom, the Catholic Student Center. Mm-hmm. They have a tape of her
yes,
talk.
Yes.
And it has been restored, and you all will be playing some segments
parts
from that
of
tape.
It. Yes. yes. And let me just say three more things that my committee members told me they'd kill me if I didn't remember to say. Early registration deadline is October 15th. You okay. get a reduction in price. The room reservation deadline has been extended at the Hilton Garden Inn till the 26th of October. And we are also looking for people who attended that talk in 1962 who might remember it, because this would be also a part of the history of that event. And there might be people around who remember going to Jean-Mard Hall in November of 1962 to hear Flannery O'Connor, and we'd love to find out who those people are so they can contact me at the university in care of the English department, and I'd love to hear from them.
So if anyone listening right now was there, please contact
yes.
her. If you think you might know someone
yes.
who might have been there,
yes, please.
Ask around and let them get in touch with mm-hmm. My guest, Marianne Wilson, a wonderful addition to the symposium, and again, just this lovely connection
yes.
with an amazing writer, Flannery O'Connor.
Absolutely.
So the tape will not be played in its entirety because
no.
it now belongs, of course, to the estate of
yes,
Flannery O'Connor.
Yes, but we have permission to play a substantial portion of it, and it's a real thrill to hear
so
her voice.
How did you choose which portion to
Well, my fellow committee member and I kind of chose together, and amazingly, we did it separately, and then we had both agreed on which passages we thought were most concrete mm-hmm, and graphic mm-hmm. and interesting, and we've chosen those.
Yeah.
Some of them are humorous. Some of mm-hmm. them are topically related to Louisiana, and I think it'll be a thrilling experience
People
for
find
whoever's
it of great
there.
Interest. Yes,
yeah.
that voice from the past,
mm-hmm.
50 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and you mentioned 2 years before she died.
Yes,
and she sounds so strong and vibrant,
mm-hmm.
and
she had been diagnosed with lupus years before, mm-hmm. and had fought it bravely, but in those days there was not a lot that could be done for lupus. And in the last 2 years of her life, shortly after this trip she made, she began to deteriorate. And if you go to Andalusia, her home in Milledgeville, you can see the typewriter, the old Olivetti typewriter she typed her stories on. You can see her crutches.
Well, that makes this tape even more precious,
yes.
knowing this was probably her last
yes.
Tour, her lecture tour.
It does.
And one of the stops was Lafayette, Louisiana,
uh-huh.
here on the UL Lafayette campus.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. That symposium, again, will be November 9th and 10th. It will be at the Alumni Center, at the Catholic Student Center, spread on
mm-hmm.
campus. You can find out more by going to the Wisdom Center
yes.
website.
Yes, or call me or email me at the university in care of the English department.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, Marianne, thank you so much, first
You're
of
welcome.
All, for preserving this tape.
Well, thank goodness I cleaned out my file cabinet, huh?
That's right. It just makes us imagine what else gets lost.
I know.
You know,
it's
all
true.
These wonderful recordings.
It's true.
And thank goodness that we have a place like the Center for Louisiana Studies that is so mindful
yes.
and able to restore tapes
and
like that.
And preserve that part yeah. of our history.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks to all of them, and thanks to you as well.
Thank you, Judy.
Again, the symposium, Flannery O'Connor, The Legacy of a Southern Catholic Writer, here on the UL Lafayette campus. Campus November 9th and 10th. And now look at what's happening in the arts and culture in South Louisiana. Auditions for a play will be held in Eunice this evening. The play is Five Women Wearing the Same Dress. That will be at 6 o'clock at the Eunice Players Theater, 121 South 2nd Street. The cast will include five women and one man. The production will run in December. This evening at the Gaines Center, there will be a reading by two poets, Bill Lavender and Frank Laser. Bill Lavender is the author of four books of poetry. Hank Laser has published 14 books of poetry. He also edits the Modern and Contemporary Poetics series. Their reading will start at 7:30 this evening in the Gaines Center, which is on the third floor in Dupre Library. The event is free and open to everyone. Also this evening, there will be a free concert of music for player piano by Conlon Nancaro in room 125 of Angèle Hall. That event is in conjunction with an online symposium in honor of Conlon Nancaro's centennial, organized by UL music professor Robert Willey. That's tonight, 7:30, free and open to everyone in room 125 of Angèle Hall. Tomorrow evening at the Hilliard University Art Museum, there will be a book signing for a new book on Louisiana art called A Unique Slant of Light, The Bicentennial History of Louisiana Art. It was edited by Richard Gruber, Director Emeritus of the Ogden Museum of Southern Art, Michael Sartiski of the LEH, and John Kemp, who is Emeritus Associate Editor from the LEH. We'll be speaking with them tomorrow about the book and the scope of the book, as well as its online presence with NOLA. That book signing will be at the Hilliard tomorrow. Doors open at 6 o'clock. It is free and open to everyone. There will be books available there and lots of discussion about Louisiana art. The Red Stick Ramblers will be performing and celebrating Festivals Acadien Thursday evening, tomorrow evening from 10 p.m. until 1 o'clock. That will be at Cochon, 921 Camellia Boulevard. All are invited to listen to the Red Stick Ramblers warm-up Festivals Acadien et Creole. Also tomorrow evening at Vermilionville, Fiddlers on the Bayou, an exploration of fiddle music and bayou conservation in South Louisiana. The program is hosted by musician David Green. He will be performing, as will Joel Savoy, Kelly Jones Savoy, Cedric Watson, and Chris Stafford. Tomorrow evening in Lafayette, the Lafayette Concert Band will hold their Fall Festival of Sound in the Lafayette High School Auditorium. The band is conducted by Gerald Gilbo. It starts at 7:30, and normally they're here at UL, but they've switched it to the Lafayette High School Auditorium because other things are happening on campus. If you have a series ticket, you can use that. Otherwise, you can purchase tickets at the door. Tomorrow, there will be a benefit for Habitat for Humanity from 4:30 to 7:30 in Park International. That will feature the music of Jamie Bergeron and the Kickin' Cajuns. It's a gumbo cook-off, and their theme is Gumbo with the Stars. Again, 4:30 it starts and goes until 7:30, benefiting Habitat for Humanity. Opening tomorrow evening at Cité des Arts, the comedy Beau Jest by James Sherman. It will run through the weekend at Cité, and it is directed by Bruce Cohn. Tickets are available by calling Cité des Arts at 291-1122 or going to their website, citedesarts.org. Tomorrow evening in Grand Coteau, there will be a special presentation of an oral history of Grand Coteau by Gwendolyn Miller. After that, Paul Gonsalin will be performing his own compositions. Also, John Sharp will be filming the presentation on Grand Coteau, and that will be archived in the Cajun and Creole Folklore Archives here at UL Lafayette. After the two scheduled performances, there will be an open mic. It is free and open to everyone. In Lake Charles tomorrow evening, the McNeese Department of Performing Arts will present the McNeese Chamber Singers in a free concert in the Shearman Fine Arts Theater. Bach Lunch continues this Friday with a performance in Parc Sanssouci by the group L'Angelus. That will be from noon until 1 o'clock. Downtown Alive continues this Friday with a performance in Park International starting at 5:30 by the group Mamou. Jeffrey Broussard and the Creole Cowboys will follow after that from 7:30 until 9 o'clock. And, of course, on Friday in Girard Park, Festivals Acadien et Creole starts off on the main stage with performances all Friday evening. Friday and Saturdays through the month of October at the Lafayette Science Museum, the Museum of of Fear is open only on Friday and Saturday evenings through October. For more information or tickets, you can go to the Lafayette Science Museum website or give their office a call. Cité des Arts will present the group Dixie Acadie on Friday, October 12th at 6:30. It's a group of young girls from 14 to 18 who perform great Acadian music. That's at Cité des Arts. And of course, Festivals Acadien et Créole starting Friday going throughout the weekend, and KRVS will be carrying that live Saturday and Sunday from beginning until end each day. So if you can't be at the park or you live far away, another state, another country, you can tune in online to KRVS.org and enjoy all of the music from the park. That will be at KRVS.org and, of course, on the radio as well. The Acadiana Repertory Theater on October 13th and 14th will have their showcase of their 2013 theater season. For more information, you can stop by their website, acadianarep.org. This Saturday, there will be a steampunk fashion workshop at Cité des Arts leading up to their steampunk fair and fashion show that will be later in November. So the workshop will be led by Lauren Green White, who is a costume designer, and she'll help you learn to design and embellish such costumes. That's Saturday at Cité des Arts. Lots of events going on at the Lafayette Public Libraries, including at the South Regional Library Storytime on Saturday morning. This is also Second Saturday Art Walk on Jefferson Street, so lots to do this weekend. From 6 until 9 p.m., galleries and exhibit spaces up and down Jefferson Street will be open with new and returning exhibits. At the Acadiana Center for the Arts in the main gallery, Configured and Reconfigured, Transformations of the Human Body. That is continuing. And in the side gallery, a collection of works by ceramicist John Gargano. But up and down Jefferson Street, lots of great art. On Saturday in Lake Charles, poet Allison Pellegrin will give a free reading of her work in Stokes Auditorium in Hartner Hall. She is part of the Leo Luke Marcello Visiting Poet Reading Series. For more information, you can go to the MacNeice website. And for a listing of programs on KRVS, you can stop by our website, which is krvs.org, clicking on the schedule button and downloading a weekly schedule. You can also podcast many of our locally produced programs. Just search for the program that you're interested in. You can listen to archived shows there on our website, or you can download them for listening to later on. That's all at krvs.org. And you can support KRVS securely at any time by clicking on the support button. KRVS's fall fundraiser will run October 19th through the 28th. We hope that many of you have received your renewal cards in the mail. You can certainly send those back in or join us during the fundraiser again beginning on Friday, October 19th. Lots of great activities and guests coming through, and you're certainly welcome to stop by to make your contribution. Stay tuned to KRVS this afternoon and evening. We're with NPR's All Things Considered from 4 until 6. From 6 to 7, Terry Gross hosts Fresh Air. At 7 o'clock, it's Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired. At 8 o'clock, Music of Yesteryears, hosted by Mr. Bob Gouchereau. At 9 o'clock, Big Band Swings, hosted by Lee Kleinpeter. At 10, Selected Shorts. At 11 o'clock, Music from the Hearts of Space. In just a few moments, we'll be joining NPR's All Things Considered.